Have you ever been like completely convinced you knew exactly what someone else was thinking?
Oh, definitely. And then found out you were way off base.
Exactly. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Can anyone, besides a higher power, really know what's going on inside someone else's head?
It's such a fundamental question, isn't it? About connection, perception, our limits.
Absolutely. And that's precisely what we're diving into today, this age-old question.
Yeah.
Can humans genuinely know each other's innermost thoughts?
And to tackle this, we've gone back to some really foundational Jewish texts.
We're looking at the Torah, the prophets, the writings,
Yeah.
and then the Mishnah, and both Talmuds, Jerusalem, and Babylonian. Really core stuff.
Yeah, the goal here, our mission, if you like, is to try and unpack the traditional Jewish perspective on this. We're digging into stories, teachings, to see if these claims sometimes made, about knowing thoughts, if they actually hold water based on the sources, or if maybe they're, well, exaggeration.
Right. We want to offer a clear, sort of grounded understanding straight from these texts. Okay, so where do we start? Maybe that verse from Deuteronomy, the hidden things.
That's the perfect starting point. Deuteronomy 29:28. The hidden things belong to the Lord our God.
But the revealed things belong to us and our children forever, that we may carry out all the words of this Torah.
Okay. Straight away, that verse raises some interesting questions, doesn't it?
It really does. Like, first off, why did Moses even need to say that? That God knows hidden things. Isn't that obvious?
Good question. And then, does hidden things belong to God mean the revealed things don't? It feels like there's a deeper layer there.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have other verses that seem different.
Right. Like in Zechariah, the eyes of the Lord roam throughout the earth. And Chronicles says basically the same thing. God's eyes roam to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him.
Which sounds like God knows everything, hidden and revealed. So it feels a bit contradictory on the surface.
It can seem that way, but the Jerusalem Talmud offers a really helpful interpretation here.
Okay, how does it reconcile this?
It clarifies that yes, the hidden things are known to God, and he will ultimately deal with them, bring judgment, but the revealed things, those are for us and our children to judge, to manage according to the Torah.
Okay. So it's sort of like a division of responsibility. God handles the unseen, we handle the seen.
That's a great way to put it. The Talmud suggests Moses was essentially telling the judges, the rabbis, look, secret thoughts, secret actions, that's beyond your scope.
Right, you can't know them for sure.
Exactly. So you're not responsible for punishing those secret sins. Your job is to deal with the visible stuff, the transgressions people can actually see.
That makes a lot of practical sense for, human justice systems.
It does. And Rashi adds another layer to this, addressing your first question, why did Moses need to state it?
Yeah, what was Rashi's take?
Rashi explains that while God does hold individuals accountable for secret thoughts, the community's responsibility is focused only on the revealed wrongdoings
Why?
to prevent wider punishment. If the community ignores the sins they can see, then everyone might suffer the consequences. So our job is the revealed, even though God knows the hidden.
Okay, so it's about communal accountability for what's out in the open.
Precisely. And Rashi also points out something interesting about the phrase, to us and our children.
What about it?
He suggests that this idea of collective punishment, even for revealed sins, really only kicked in after the Israelites crossed the Jordan and entered that covenant, becoming responsible for each other in a new way.
That adds a whole historical context to it. Interesting.
It really does. It shows how this idea of communal responsibility evolved.
So, pulling this all together, the fundamental takeaway seems to be no human, no matter how great, can truly know another person's secret thoughts. That's God's territory.
That's the strong foundation we're seeing. But okay, now let's look at a story that might seem to challenge this idea. Rebekah and Esau.
Right. Genesis 27. Esau is furious, plotting in his heart to kill Jacob after losing the blessing. And somehow, Rebekah finds out.
It certainly sounds like she knew his thoughts, doesn't it?
It does. And our matriarchs were prophets, so doesn't that mean a prophet can know someone's thoughts? It feels like a contradiction.
That's the immediate puzzle. But look closely at the wording in the Torah, and it was told to Rebekah.
Ah, told, not she knew or she sensed. That feels specific.
Very specific, crucial even. It doesn't say she figured it out or had some innate mind-reading ability. She was informed.
And doesn't the Jerusalem Targum elaborate on this?
It absolutely does. It translates that phrase as, "And it was revealed to Rebekah in the Holy Spirit the words of Esau, her elder son, which he thought in his heart to kill Jacob."
Revealed in the Holy Spirit. Okay, that's even clearer.
Exactly. Revealed, not new. The Targum seems to deliberately use that word to teach us something important, that even a prophetess like Rebekah didn't just know inner thoughts on her own. God specifically revealed Esau's intention to her at that moment because it was so incredibly critical.
So it was a specific divine communication for a specific purpose, not a general ability.
Precisely. Think about it. If Rebekah could read minds, wouldn't the verse praise her amazing insight? Instead, it just says it was told to her. And it was just that thought, not everything going on in Esau's head.
That really highlights how exceptional it is for a human to get that kind of information.
It absolutely does. It reinforces the main point. When God does reveal a single thought out of countless possibilities to a prophet, it's a big deal. It underscores the general rule that humans don't know each other's thoughts.
What do commentators like Rashi and Radak say about this verse? Do they pick up on this?
They do. They both emphasize the divine source told to her in the Holy Spirit. They express a sort of wonder, like how does she know his unspoken plan? Which again points to it being an exceptional revelation, not just her figuring it out.
Okay, so the Rebekah story actually ends up supporting the main idea rather than contradicting it. What about other cases like Jeroboam or Haman? The text says they said in his heart.
Good examples. 1 Kings 12, Jeroboam thinks, uh-oh, the kingdom might go back to David's family. And Esther 6, Haman thinks, who else would the king want to honor but me? Clearly internal thoughts.
So how did the writers know?
Well, that's where it gets interesting. Ibn Ezra, commenting on Esther, brings this up directly regarding Haman. He mentions that some scholars actually argued the whole scroll of Esther must have been written through prophecy.
Right.
Precisely because it reveals hidden thoughts like Haman's. Their logic was, only God knows hidden thoughts, and he sometimes reveals them to prophets.
Wow. So the very act of recording the thought points towards divine revelation.
That was one strong line of thought. Now, Ibn Ezra notes other possibilities. Maybe Haman was just obviously arrogant. Maybe he let it slip later. But ultimately, Ibn Ezra himself leans towards the idea that, yes, including Haman's unspoken thought, likely involved prophetic insight.
It seems like our sages really grappled with these verses. They wanted to make sure these examples didn't somehow undermine the basic principle that only God knows thoughts.
Exactly. They needed to reaffirm that core idea. Even someone as righteous as Esther didn't inherently know Haman's mind. It had to be revealed to her.
Mm-hmm.
And emphasizing the divine source, the exceptional nature of it.
So really, when you look at all this, the idea that, you know, my rabbi or some leader knows exactly what I'm thinking, it starts to seem, a bit foolish, doesn't it?
It really does seem inconsistent with how these foundational texts understand the limits of human knowledge. The ability to truly know the heart seems reserved for God alone.
Let's shift to Samuel the prophet, a huge figure, right?
Absolutely massive. The Talmud puts him on par with Moses and Aaron in his generation, a major prophet.
Okay, so he's sent to anoint a new king from Jesse's sons. He sees the first son, Eliab.
Yes, and Samuel is impressed. Eliab looks the part, tall and imposing. Samuel thinks, surely this is the Lord's anointed. That's 1 Samuel 16.
But God immediately corrects him.
Instantly. God says to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
The Lord looks at the heart. That's powerful. So God actually knew Samuel's thought about Eliab.
It seems so. God saw Samuel making an assumption based purely on looks. Samuel probably figured, like King Saul before him, a king needs to look impressive to command respect.
Yeah, Saul was described as really tall and striking.
Right. So Samuel's thought process was understandable, human, but God corrects him. Don't judge by the outside. I look deeper. Radak suggests God knew Eliab's heart wasn't right, despite the impressive exterior.
So even Samuel, this incredible prophet, couldn't see Eliab's inner flaws just by looking at him.
Exactly. He couldn't know the secret thoughts or the character issues. If a prophet like Samuel couldn't do it, who are we to claim our teacher or anyone else can?
It's a strong point about humility and just how limited our perception is. Does the Malbim comment on this too?
He does. The Malbim really drives home this contrast. Humans judge by externals, the physical, and we often miss the inner flaws. But God looks straight at the heart, the inner qualities, the character. that's what matters.
It's a consistent theme then, across the board. Only God truly knows the thoughts of the heart.
That's the clear understanding from the commentators. The inner person, the hidden thoughts, that's God's focus, not just the outward show.
Okay, let's take another angle. King Josiah, known for being incredibly righteous, right?
Absolutely. A major reformer, deeply committed to Torah. But his death, fighting Pharaoh Necho, it's another telling story.
Why did he even go fight Pharaoh? Radak has an explanation, doesn't he?
Yes, Radak suggests Josiah genuinely thought he had to fight, based on his interpretation of a verse like, "A sword shall not pass through your land." He thought this meant even a foreign army just passing through peacefully was forbidden, and that God would grant him victory because he was upholding God's will.
But he was tragically wrong. And the reason why is key here.
Exactly. Josiah had no idea that many people in his generation were secretly practicing idolatry. He was completely unaware.
Even though he was this righteous king leading reforms.
Yes. Jeremiah's prophecies from that time paint a picture of widespread hidden idol worship. It was happening in secret.
So what does that tell us?
Two crucial things. One, because the sin was secret, even a great king like Josiah didn't know about it. We're talking secret actions here, not just thoughts. Two, even if the king isn't blamed for secret sins he doesn't know about, those sins can still cause divine protection to be withdrawn. Like we saw with Joshua and Achan, secret sin can have public consequences.
Wow, so even the best human leader can be totally unaware of deep problems right under their nose.
It's another powerful confirmation of the principle we're exploring. Human knowledge is limited, especially when it comes to the hidden actions and hearts of others.
Okay, so even great prophets and kings couldn't know. What about the patriarchs? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. They were incredibly close to God. Could they read thoughts?
The story suggests remarkably that they couldn't either. Take Isaac and Esau again. Genesis tells us Isaac loved Esau because of the game in his mouth.
Right, which sounds like he just liked the food Esau hunted.
That's the surface. But the Jerusalem Targum and Rashi see more there. They interpret in his mouth as Esau being deceitful, tricky.
How so?
Rashi explains Esau would flatter Isaac, asking him hyper-religious questions about tithing tiny things like salt or straw, making himself seem incredibly meticulous and righteous. But his heart wasn't in it. It was an act.
So if Isaac, in all his greatness, could read Esau's thoughts, wouldn't he have seen through that deception?
You'd think so. The fact that he was fooled really underscores this point. Inner thoughts. That seems to remain God's domain, even for Isaac.
What about Jacob? His sons tricked him so cruelly about Joseph.
Another heart-wrenching example. They bring the bloody coat, spin this story about a wild animal. If Jacob could read their thoughts, he'd have known instantly they were lying.
But there's that Targum interpretation again, isn't there? About Jacob seeing something else.
There is. The Jerusalem Targum says when Jacob saw the coat, he perceived in the Holy Spirit that a bad woman stands against him. Which is fascinating.
So again, any insight he did have wasn't mind-reading, but a specific prophetic flash, like his mother Rebecca.
It seems that way. It was revelation, not inherent knowledge of their minds. And then there's Abraham and Sarah. Remember the laughter.
When the angels promised a child in their old age, Sarah laughed inwardly.
Yes, she thought, after I am worn out and my Lord is old. Total disbelief directed partly at Abraham's age, too.
Right. But God handles that delicately.
Very delicately. The Midrash Rabbah points out that when God repeated Sarah's thought to Abraham, he changed it slightly. He left out the "and my Lord is old" part.
Why?
To keep the peace. The Talmud in Bava Metzia highlights this, saying peace is so great that God himself altered the words.
And then there's that whole story about Sarah nursing babies later to prove Isaac was theirs and Isaac's appearance changing.
Right. Those later details emphasize the miracle, but also the doubts people had, even about Abraham and Sarah.
But the key point about the laughter is God knew Sarah's full thought, including the bit about Abraham being old. Abraham didn't.
Exactly. God knew her inner doubt about her husband's age. God had to edit the message for Abraham's ears. It shows even Abraham didn't know his own wife's secret thought. Only God did.
And Ibn Ezra adds another layer to this.
He does. He comments that the reason the text says Sarah thought in her heart or mind is because God revealed that secret thought to the angel.
Wait, so even the angel didn't know Sarah's thought until God revealed it?
That's Ibn Ezra's implication, which is profound. Not only do humans not know thoughts, but even angels, these spiritual beings, apparently don't inherently know them either. God had to tell the angel what Sarah was thinking.
That really drives the point home. It seems utterly consistent.
It really is. Even the patriarchs, these incredibly holy figures, close to God, recipients of the Holy Spirit getting divine insights. Even they didn't know the hidden thoughts of others, so if they didn't, how much less likely is it for anyone in later generations?
So wrapping this all up, after this really fascinating deep dive into these core texts, the main finding seems crystal clear.
Yeah, it really does. The ability to truly know what's going on in someone else's head, their innermost thoughts, it's consistently presented as something belonging only to God, exclusively.
And while, yes, prophets, righteous people, they sometimes got insights.
Those were specific divine revelations, like a specific message for a specific moment, not some built-in human mind-reading superpower.
Right. Hopefully for you listening, this exploration has brought some clarity to that question we started with, that curiosity about knowing others' minds.
And maybe it leaves us with a final thought to chew on. If we accept we can't truly know another's heart, what does that mean for us?
How should it affect how we judge people, our relationships?
Yeah, and how we understand just being human, knowing we're all interacting, but really we only see the surface. What does trust mean then? How do we navigate that?
It definitely encourages, I think, a certain humility, maybe focusing more on actions while acknowledging there's always that hidden depth we can't access. Lots to think about.
Absolutely. Something to keep reflecting on.